being a movie director and existing in this technological world and sort of feeling like I'm harnessing a vision of the future, there was definitely a narrative tale. And that tale ended up emerging throughout all this research. And there's a log line that's pretty cool. As you know, every movie has a log line. And the log line for our film of the future is, when driving's outlawed, only outlaws will drive.
Welcome back to the Future Car Podcast. It's Ed, Vice President of Strategic Automotive Initiatives at Siemens PLM. But before I had this career in the automotive industry, I was just a kid like everybody else, pretty normal, nothing out of the ordinary. And like any little boy growing up in the Midwest, I played with cars. My favorite toy car looked just like the one Mario Andretti drove to his first Indy 500 win. It was red, had big open wheels, and a number 2 on the front. I would drive it around my little miniature track over and over again, timing it each time with a stopwatch, always trying to break the previous record, just like Mario was doing on the big Indy Speedway. The future is moving towards a world where traveling will become an efficient, autonomous driving experience. And it's going to be exciting. It'll be something to look forward to. No longer will we have to sit in traffic, crunch for time, with our hands on the steering wheel. There will be a lot of head-banging driving scenarios we won't have to deal with anymore. However, one of those things is driving itself. What about the drivers, the car fiends, the gearheads, the folks that love nothing more than going under the hood, pressing the gas, rolling the windows down, and feeling that wind rush through their hair? In the future, what happens to those of us that like to drive?
The goal of Hackrod is really to empower the everyman to have the vehicle of his dreams or needs. We really got away from accessibility in mobility throughout the tail end of the 20th century. And we really got away from that ability to dream about building and doing what you want, interestingly enough. The technology transitioned out of the hands of the everyman and into large corporations overall. And I have to say, a lot of these corporations weren't run by creative guys who were car guys or product guys. They were run by financial guys. And, you know, we definitely went from the muscle car era into the melee era of the 70s and haven't totally recovered from that since.
Miles McCoy is CEO of Hackrod, an industry 4.0 company whose mission is to reinvent the way vehicles are designed, engineered, and produced. Hackrod's partnering with Siemens to bring AI technology and software into the manufacturing process of these dream vehicles. Think of a racing game, any racing game. It can be anything from Need for Speed to Mario Kart. Remember when you were loading the screen before the race? You'd look at a big line of cars, the selections of all the add-ons, assortment of colors, or the different designs, the engines, or the features you wanted in the car. It was exciting. And that's what Hackrod's all about, making your real-life dream vehicle as easy as designing a car in a video game. If you couldn't tell by his enthusiasm, Miles is quite the car guy. And before he made the career move of heading a company dedicated to giving people the car of their dreams, you'd find him behind the wheel.
I guess the story starts with how I got my name. And I actually got a motorcycle for my first birthday. And was a little bitty kid who was pretty quick and took to motorcycling right away. I started racing at 4 years old. And once again, hence, Mouse was a pretty good racing name for a little kid who was pretty quick. So I kept racing most of my life. I turned professional at 14 after winning numerous amateur national championships. And took off on a professional motorcycle racing career, which then led me into the second phase of my career, which was as a professional stuntman, stunt rider, and stunt car driver. From there, I continued to have good success in that industry, And my racing took a little bit of a different turn. I switched from motocross racing to off-road. And off-road in the western part of the world is really looked at as desert racing. And primarily, I set my sights on the Baja Peninsula.
And you were, I believe, one of the first ones to ever take a motorcycle 1,000 miles through the Baja 1000, right?
Yeah, for people that don't know about that race, the Baja 1000 is regarded as the toughest and most dangerous race in the world. It's 1,000 miles nonstop down the Baja Peninsula, which is still pretty much the Wild West out there. And so, you know, 1,000 miles through some of the roughest, harshest terrain in the world looked like a pretty good challenge. So as I said, I set my sights on Baja, and it became a big part of my life. And I didn't just decide to do it the conventional way. Traditionally, in the motorcycle classes, guys race on teams, usually four guys to a team. And each rider usually taking about 250 miles of the leg, which that in itself is pretty brutal. But I kind of looked up the top of the mountain down there and said, you know, how could I challenge myself the hardest? And I set course to solo in the Baja 1000. And so that meant nonstop at race speeds for 1,000 miles on a motorcycle.
But Miles' expertise and experience with cars doesn't stop there. We see cars in different aspects of our culture. Race car driving is just one of them. You find cars in commercials and action movies. Think of all the car montages, races, chase scenes, and ready, set, go scenarios you've seen on the screen. Mouse has experience in movies as well, and he produced a 2012 film, Act of Valor.
I grew up in the film business. Both my parents were in it, and I was sort of that next generation of stuntmen. And so I kind of had a leg in. You know, the film business is tough to get in, but I had some pretty good skill sets as a motorcycle rider and a driver. So that transitioned well, and you know, I moved on to being a top stuntman. And the thing about that is, as a stuntman, you get an amazing education. You know, I was fortunate to work for, you know, a number of the top Hollywood action directors at the time. And, you know, you're blocking out scenes, working with the camera department, with the director, with the other talent. So you really get an idea of it. And I said, well, I think I can do it myself or do it better. And as I was getting a little bit older, the natural transition was to jump up to producer and director. So I actually produced the film Act of Valor as well as starred in it. And from there, I just felt like I could do this and transition. Well, you know what? I got to back up. There's a little moment in between that was definite pivot point and helped my decision to move from stunts to directing. I was shooting a job up in Canada, and I was on an ATV, and it was the only time that I've ever really been hurt bad on a job, but I flipped an ATV off the side of a mountain, full throttle, top gear into the rocks, and just absolutely destroyed myself and sheared my tibia and fibia in half, blew the bones out. Literally, my foot was up by my knee with the bones blown out, and ended up in the hospital in bed for about 6 months. And at that point, I said, well, you know, you probably ought to think about that other career you were talking about directing. Now's a good time. And got out of bed and then set my sights on a different direction, which was becoming a top Hollywood action director.
You see it and you don't realize the amount of engineering that goes on behind it. Like you were saying, smaller cameras that you can carry and things like that. And people don't really appreciate the amount of effort that goes into just making that possible from a technical standpoint. And two of the greatest car stunts, world record setting car stunts that you've been involved in, the Hot Wheels double loop, where two cars went through a 60-foot vertical loop, you know, simulating what's done with little Hot Wheel cars. And then I was actually at the 100th running, or the 100th anniversary of the Indy 500 in May of 2011, and saw the world record distance car jump that was, I think, 332 feet. So can you tell us a little bit about the engineering and the understanding of the physics and all that? How'd you go about making these two world record car stunts, you know, successful on the first try?
Yeah, we actually had 3 world records. So we ended up setting 3 world records in 18 months. The little known third world record was the world's longest corkscrew jump.
What's a corkscrew jump?
It's a barrel roll.
Oh, wow.
We barrel rolled a car almost 100 and some feet, which was a real tricky piece of engineering. But let me tell you the story how this all happened. So I had built a pretty big reputation as a top guy in action filmmaking with a heavy car background. And my now partner, Felix Holst, was running creative for Hot Wheels worldwide and product design. And his vision was to reignite the brand and bring it to life and go from a toy brand to a lifestyle brand for boys of all ages. And Hot Wheels for Real was born. And the concept was to mimic how kids play with their toys and bring it to life full scale and really go about showing kids that play and their dreams could become a reality. So we set out on a legendary creative brief, which had a 150-foot door with a life-size Hot Wheels track and a photo of Evel Knievel standing at the bottom. And that was the brief. And he said, "Hey, man, can you bring this to life for us?" And I said, "Yeah, I think so." And, you know, we wanted to go set some world records along the way. I got a note. The Evel Knievel inspiration was good because that's the tone and the feel we wanted to set. But Evel Knievel actually only holds one world record, and that's for most broken bones. And we weren't looking to break any bones. So we set out to go set some world records. And the first one up was to go set the world record for the longest car jump. But we just didn't do this with a long run up and make it easy. We actually had to go build a 150-foot door in the middle of the Indy 500, put a life-size Hot Wheels track, and figure out how to jump a truck the length of a football field. And, you know, it's funny, at the time, we were pretty much using what I like to call Chuck Yeager style, which is big balls, good math, and a lot of pros in the stack. But we didn't have a lot of reliable advanced technologies. So, you know, we ended up doing traditional workups, building the truck that we felt could take the loads, and doing it by a lot of feel, a lot of the seat of the pants and slide rule math. And we ended up pulling off the impossible. And I think we went from concept to world record inside of 4 months as an engineering cycle, to think about that.
Now, if you think about doing stuff like that in 4 months, if you had all these simulation tools with the world's greatest computers and all that, that's one thing. But doing all that without that capability, you had to have some very special techniques, I would imagine. Like, as you say, you had to hack the solution with whatever tools you had available, right?
Well, you know what? I like to call it, there was a lot of wizardry. So when I say wizardry, there's this innate skill set that came out of the 20th century. And, you know, 20th century hot rodding and racing. You know, for instance, up until a few years ago, the fastest off-road cars in the world were strung out with chalk on a shop floor and built by just innate knowledge that was passed along. We